Welcome to Blind Shovel, an arts and music podcast. Today I speak with painter Adam Lovitz. Hope you enjoy.
We did it.
I'm nervous for as I continue to get older and how illiterate I am with tech stuff. I did not find that moon icon, but I don't think anybody will be bothering me.
Calling you? Yeah, I mean,
I think nobody's calling me.
It's going to be a badge of honor being completely technologically illiterate in like 5 minutes.
I hope so. Yeah, I hope that it like, I'll just learn to I'm slowly embracing it right now and kind of just becoming more and more I just don't really care all that much.
How did you manage to avoid it? I mean, that's the real question.
I don't think I'm avoiding it. I think it's just like not in my when it's necessary, I'll figure it out. Like, I have faith that I have the ability to figure things out, even though I couldn't find that simple silent icon.
It's okay.
You know, so
I forgive.
I have kids. They'll hopefully be patient and teach me whatever I need to know.
You have multiple kids now?
I have kids, plural. I have two boys. Yeah.
Nice.
So yeah, I hope that you're down for like a little, for me, for my house right now, it's like a nice little nature walk to the train station. It's regional. I live right outside Philly now. I think when we last saw each other, you came to visit my studios in South Philly.
Yeah, you had a house too.
We had a townhouse in South Philly, right off Broad Street. We moved in 2020 to a place called Wallingford. It's near Swarthmore, which is probably the more familiar town. Swarthmore College, near Media.
And is this in Philadelphia?
It's right outside. It's in Delco. So I am. Delco is a term that Delaware County. Yeah, but Delco is like a term for, I don't know, just the people. Like, if you go to a Home Depot in the heart of Delco, there's a very specific accent, and just there's a thick kind of something in the air that just is a little bit different. Actually, like, I don't know if you saw that HBO show with Kate Winslet, Mayor of Easttown or whatever.
No, certainly not.
No. Okay. It was, that was rooted in Delco. I bring it up because it like paints her as like an alcoholic police officer just in a townhome. And that's a particular identity, for sure. But, there's a range of peoples in Delco, of course. And I think it's just like, if you think of like the typical kind of Philly sports fan, there's that permeates Delco vibes. So yeah, it's right outside Philly, but it definitely takes on the kind of, I don't know, any outsider Philly trying to distinguish what a Philly form is. Delco is definitely a part of that equation. But it's not.
How'd you
but
end
it's
up
not
there?
In the city. It's not in the city. So I grew up in Havertown, which is Delco, and I swore we'd never go back.
Yeah, that happens.
You know, but so we lived in South Philly for over a decade. During 2020, we just started feeling a little claustrophobic. Everything shut down around us. We had a toddler. I kept pulling up GPS just looking for green space to escape to. Yeah. And it kept bringing me out like the largest areas were 20 minutes outside of Philly, near Ridley Creek State Park, near where we are right now. And we just like water holes to swim in, really nice hiking. And then we started just talking about like getting serious about, you know, we started looking at homes in West Philly and other places in Philly, thinking about schools, public schools, and just wasn't in our range. So we got really lucky. I mean, we put a, it was So we bought. It's a crazy market to buy. We put a couple offers in and lost out. And then this one house we found, it was off market and kind of had exactly what we needed. It's got a two-car garage, which already came with a gas heater. And I drywalled it. So that's my working studio.
Nice.
Yeah, it's got half an acre. It's not the woods behind us, but it's woodsy. There's trees and privacy. And I was ready to, something inside of me. I was craving just to, and I'm glad we didn't jump on this impulse, but I was ready to move to the middle of nowhere, coming from the city and knowing we're about to move and pandemic and just the world and everything. And my wife, Emily, is more the grounded, practical partner. So this home that we found is a nice balance. It's definitely suburbs, but we can walk in our backyard and feel like we're in our own world. And, I'm going to walk us, you and I, on the phone to the train station, which is 5-minute walk, and it'll pop me right into Philly in 15 minutes. So it's good. It's accessible. I still feel disconnected as opposed to when I'm living in the city. It's different. It's, I didn't think it would be so having to drive to town instead of just opening the front door. It's obviously a huge difference. Opening my front door now consists of hearing birds and a neighbor that I may or may not have known. There's some neighbors that are sociable, but a lot of neighbors around, I haven't really gotten their name, and that's fine. But in Philly, I'd open my door and it'd be within a second, I'd be meeting 10 new people if somebody's not passed out on my stoop.
Right.
It's the life, the world is at our front step in Philly. And that was a beautiful thing. And I miss that. When you're in it, you're at times can be ugh, I got to clean up somebody's piss again off the front, our pills have just been dropped off all over our front step, all these things that were just making it a little bit more difficult to have a toddler who started, having tantrums on the sidewalk with broken glass and chicken wings. And, this makes it, we have a driveway now, which is what a privilege to have a driveway and not have to park 3 blocks away.
Yeah. So you're full on suburban.
Yeah. Mostly embracing it, but yeah, still
you might as well.
You got to. Yeah, for sure.
But how does that, so where's your career at?
Career, I mean, it's multifaceted, I suppose. It always has been. I've had, range of positions, but for the past decade, I've been adjuncting, teaching at college level, and that has shifted actually big time. Realizing that it wasn't really in the cards, I suppose, to accelerate that college level, finding a tenure job in Philly is, there's so many wonderful artists that are teaching, and then mostly the teachers that are getting tenure positions are being sought outside of the Philly, to establish a name to the school. So yeah, it was a pawn, and I think it served me well in the flexibility and the time and the balance, but I wasn't necessarily looking for a next step, but I knew something in me was all right, I got to figure something else out. This is not sustainable. Especially around 2020 when classes were being canceled, and I just was all right, I don't have work. I was working at ICA, Institute of Contemporary Art in Philly, as an art handler, but that I loved that job so much. But it wasn't full time. It was only when exhibitions are going up, coming down. So yeah, I just had all these jobs that were just not, had no trajectory of not permanence, but sustainability and
longevity.
Longevity, yeah. And so now I am. So former neighbor had reached out and asked if I'd be interested to apply to an art teacher position at an independent school. 5 years ago, I would definitely said no. Because I've had these conversations with myself, am I, should I just apply to be a high school art teacher? And then that would satisfy my, the full time, the contract, the kind of sustainability. Yeah, I just kept coming to terms like, no, that's not, that doesn't go in line with, you know, what my vision is. How do I have this, how do I make art and have a full-time job? But it was, yeah, I was responsible. I gave a lot of thought about it. There was no pressure, but I was like, what's it going to hurt by just learning more about the position? The position sounded really attractive. Like I'm kind of starting an art program. It's always been an elective. So I get to start this program and kind of build this culture inside the school that, you know, look for the sincere young artists that had been wanting a program like this. And I've been here 2 years.
So what was the nature of the program?
Yeah. So it was when I got there, it was a teacher who I met briefly, but she was awesome. Ceramicist. And it was mostly a middle school elective program. There wasn't much opportunity for high schoolers. So that's what I was brought into to create this institute, as they call it. And just to essentially create like a trajectory for freshmen going to the, you know, each year kind of building up their skills, but also like be able to plug them into Philly art scene, get them kind of understanding that, you know, the expansiveness of what art could be. It doesn't just need to be what they, you know, like all the syllabus that were given to me had the word like mastery in it. I'm just like, you're not going to master anything here. And yeah, just to kind of like break it down, create the ability for them to find, cultivate, a voice for themselves through high school.
Can you elaborate on not mastering things in that context?
Not mastering things, because that puts so much pressure on a young student who's like just starting out. They're going to think that art has to be this talent based or this like this skill that, you know, if that puts a lot of pressure. And then they're going to look at peers that are better than them at the moment. And when I say better, they're just looking at their technical abilities and nothing else, you know. No students were really celebrating ideas or the emotions or the just sincerity that went into making artwork. And that's where I was in high school too. My ego was like inflated just from how well of a portrait I could draw of a friend, or I had a crush on a girl. I'm going to draw her portrait and then I'm going to get like oohs and ahs over my ability to make it look somewhat look like her, but now at cringe level when I look at it now, which is awesome. So I was teaching from college level, right? And I was teaching experimental drawing. I was teaching classes that were rooted in process, and it was jarring to come to a program in high school where students were seeking that end product really fast, talent. And if they didn't have what they deemed as talent, they'd be very hesitant to get started. And so I was trying to encourage a place of experimentation, not mastery, just kind of being a little bit more loose and discovery. While at the same time teaching those technical kind of the tools that they need to utilize to find certain confidence. But yeah, it's a whole different paradigm. And I knew it was going to be, but I learned a lot in the past couple of years that it was even just a larger jump. I mean, so when I was teaching college, like in 2022, like, something was going on, is going on in the psyche of humans, not only young people, but especially young people that because I was teaching freshmen that were coming, that been at their home for the past 2 years, not really socializing. And then they came to like, I was teaching at Temple, Tyler School of Art. And this is the first time that a lot of these kids were out on their own. And all of a sudden they're just like in North Philly and like, and the slightest like error on, like if a student didn't turn something in on time or if they didn't get something, they would break down, like ultra sensitivity. Like, so I definitely see that in high school level of like, I don't know if it's maturity. I don't know what sort of, what happened. And again, I think this is happening on an adult level too. If we all just kind of went through some sort of whatever it was, whatever.
If I may posit a theory that's probably wrong. I think when you interact too much with the frictionless, customizable nature of the internet and digital world for 2 years plus, and then you interact with actual reality, physical reality that talks back, people's patience with that is ever decreasing. It's also decreasing in respect to other people who provide friction via different opinions or different worldviews.
They can't just swipe away, scroll down.
Yeah, exactly.
They got to look at person in the eyes. And I actually did a lot of exercises with students like that, that are, you know, common, but like drawing, you know, a continuous contour portrait of their peer, but having to look, you know, not looking down and looking at their classmates' eyes and face for like 2 minutes straight. It was beautiful. Like the tension, the awkwardness, there was just a lot of giggling, but yeah, there was definitely, and I hope if more than anything was just, it was productive in kind of bringing them back to this physical world, like little exercises like that. Cause that's what drawing is. I mean, it's, you know, you're feeling that mark. That's what it was more philosophical of, like less technical when I was at, you know, college level. And I try to bring that into high school of like what the action that you are doing right now, scratching something, pushing something, you are communicating whatever it is, vulnerability, confidence, excitement through that drawn mark. And you are staring at something in physical space, whether it be a person's face or, and there's signals being sent across from you too. And that energy is, can be kind of built into the marks that you're making. I try to do that when we were teaching virtual, just like draw your little window of the Zoom window, and please turn your screens on, you know, like all that weird stuff that it conflicts with, you know? Yeah. All that. It's just, that's another thing too. Cursed a lot, like not a lot, but I wasn't a pirate in college. I was more just intuitive with how I spoke, and then coming to high school, I feel like after the first year, I'm realizing like the filter that I've had to establish.
Of course,
but yeah, man.
So you're teaching currently or no?
I'm teaching currently. I have 3 more weeks left until the summer, which is fantastic. So I'm about to head outside too. You ready to go? I'm going to take you for a little walk outside, and it's got a nice little drizzle happening.
Nice. So from like your career path from when you were young, was it always, were you always wanted to be a teacher or no?
No, I really didn't have like a, I just wanted to center it around art. I don't know, like obviously the ideal version path would be me right now, like not reporting to a job and just going to my studio every day. And, but obviously, you know, I have friends that have that reality, and grass is always greener, or they have like really good things going on, and I could see that that would be incredible. That's like ultimate. But right now I'm kind of just, I've collected experiences that have allowed me to meet people that connect me to new opportunities. So I didn't like seek out the high school teaching job. I wasn't like, you know, to be honest, I probably wasn't like one of like many applicants. It's because I knew somebody that knew I had teaching experience, that knew I was sort of seeking what was coming next, and they reached out, and they reached out at the right moment where I was open to try a new teaching space out. And they were embracing the reason why she reached out is because I do have that college teaching background, and that was exciting for their new program. And, so yeah, just kind of like, that's how it's gone. I feel like after grad school is, I started working at ICA because I had friends that were working there. I had certain skill sets, but nothing like the carpentry or whatever, the construction skill sets that I had to learn on the job or that my friends had already obtained. So I learned a lot there. I certainly probably was, you know, before that job, I was working on architectural restoration. So like working with my hands, and I've had this balance between like working those kind of those labor jobs rooted in some sort of creative space, but also balancing teaching at the same time. So just kind of always holding on to a collection of things, and you know, through, and also like selling work. I've never sold enough to be able to like, all right, I'm gonna take the leap and let's see how far this will last. But that's like, you know, that is a side income. So just the, yeah, I definitely have like a, you know, a mixed bag of income. But teaching at high school has allowed me to simplify a bit. Mm-hmm. Like fully embracing the summer. Hold on, let this car go by. My wife is a teacher too, elementary school level. She's like, that's what she went to school for. That's what her like passion, that's what everything is for her. She's kind of been my mentor the past couple of years, but yeah, for her, she knew that. Like, she's been in it, in the game for a long time. So we get to have summers off together. So that was definitely like another pro. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's, and then the downsides of it are like all of a sudden I have a Monday to Friday, like full-time job that I then need to come home and kind of find the energy then to be present with family. And then like, do I have anything left in me to go in the studio? And, you know, it's fun and brutal and beautiful and very hard. And I'm trying to, you know, I think like when my son was, when he was like a toddler, when we were living in Philly and I was adjuncting and I was also able to be like stay at home dad a bit. I was getting very anxious and stressed that I wasn't having these like 8-hour studio days or whatever. And just, or like going in anytime. It was more of a, collection of time slots that just pieced together into, all right, like maybe I'm not in there for 8 straight hours, but my studio has always been at my house. So I'm able to sneak away during a nap and mix like a few colors for that are going to be waiting for me at nighttime. And I think that has worked out somewhat because I have become less hesitant. I'm like, just make a move and trust my impulses more.
Right.
Because of that limitation on time, I have been feeling the weight of it on that limitation recently. So that's why I'm really looking forward to the summer where I can just have more time of like hours in the studio that I can see an idea through and not just like have to put it on hold. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is it what you imagine in respect to having kids and trying to find studio time? Or is there no way to imagine that?
I don't think there is a way to imagine it. I don't think there's a way to get ready for it. I think like a funny thing happened like with our first child. It's like, damn, this shit is hard. I'm like on the edge of insanity at like, just when I'm talking about like early baby times when you're getting to sleep and you're really feeling the primacy of like your humanness. like it's, yeah, some weird things kind of just shake up inside of you at a primal level. And but I think that was all part of it. Like I've learned just to kind of like manifest those energies into, all right, going to my studio and like not looking for that. I don't know, just embracing what I'm able to do there and I'll tell you in a bit how that sort of now as they get older, how that kind of filters into my studio. But then we had second child, Levi. He's going to be 3 in the summer. And it really, like having that second child made the first child, like baby's phase, seem so easy. Yeah. It just, everything comes with new perspective, new point of views. And I envy certain people that have those like vision and goals and they obtain and they go through kind of, I don't know if it's linear how they get there, I have kind of just been dealing with like conversations in my head that it's okay that this is a part of my life right now, and that this is not going to be just like really, like, it's important to continue to tell myself like this shit is not going to last forever. I'm not going to get this time with them. And, you know, instead of going into my, instead of like coming home straight from work and going straight to my studio, which my wife has supported, like, if this is what you need to do, do it. And I want to be eating dinner and like reading stories to them after, you know. So, but I think what's happened is like my work has always had some sort of kid coding on it, like child aesthetic of sorts. And so I'm getting to watch, I'm getting to introduce them to like old cartoons that I watched or Nickelodeon and stuff. And then I get to watch what they watch. And
right.
That has placed, it has a place in my studio. I'm now bringing like old toys of mine into the studio and dissecting them and collaging them into paintings, which I always like put a rule. I put this funny rule in my studio saying a painting is painting. And I've always like had a shelf of just random materials and objects and found and personal that I just arrange. I don't necessarily paint like a still life, but they're just there as like a altar that, and I've always separated that, but more recently this past year, I've like allowed myself to situate objects, physical elements in my, all my surfaces. And it's fun to bring my kids or my older one in the studio and get his feelings on it, because I know that he can at least find some connection to the colors or the toy elements of the playfulness.
Yeah.
And yeah, he usually is like brutally honest, and I probably, you know, if he says it's scary or things like that, I'm like hitting something. If he just kind of walks by, I'm like, yeah, I know, it's not quite there yet. So I think, yeah, me being a parent, me being a teacher, all these things that you can't really presume how they would have an impact or plan for it on your idea of life. I think it's healthier just to absorb it in a way that becomes just another layer to what you can,
you have to integrate it. You know, most people I interview who have kids, there's no way to compartmentalize that out.
No, people do it, right? Like reading Philip Guston book, like written by his daughter, like, essentially establishing how much of a, you know, terrible, I don't think terrible, he was there, but he wasn't there. And while I'm reading this, is like, is this what I need to be? Like,
Well, yeah, I've had that thought with Miyazaki. But yeah, I don't know much about Guston as a father.
Yeah, she was along for the ride, you know, which is like exciting. But yeah, her childhood, there was no like, see, I'm not, you know, I haven't really put a dent into it, but it seems like she's both kind of in awe and understanding of his significance, but at the same time, maybe lost out on just basic childhood stuff.
Yeah, it's a delicate balance.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and like I remember when I was growing up, my mom's an artist, so like I would be sitting by her while she was painting, and I would just be thinking this is just the natural thing that people do. Like push colors around and stuff and draw and whatnot. So I love that idea of like, there's a corner in my studio for my kids, and I don't go to them like, it's studio time, get out your, you know, it's like, it's always there when they want it. But, they both have like, they both, when they ask, like, I want to draw, can you get out the marker? I'm like, yes, please. And I'll just like, right, it's right. Most like wonderful. I feel like I can't get much work done myself, because I kind of just am there in my peripheral vision of like observing their impulses. I was actually listening to one of your podcasts and talking about the, I don't know, the brutality of like, of which, I think you said it, of which a child like delivers a mark or like uses materials, because they're unfettered from this idea of like anything that's they're just, yeah, they're really like pure in that moment.
They simultaneously don't give a shit about the resources because they didn't have to buy it. Mm-hmm. But also they, I think they're, obviously they're not making a product to sell. So they're not concerned about that at all. And I think it seems to me that children, you know, it must be frustrating. It's like trying to learn a different language where they probably feel like they have so much to say and want to get so much out, but they don't have the means yet.
But at the same, yeah, go ahead.
So like drawing becomes this really liberating activity that, you know, although I can be like doom and gloom about the effects of AI on like careers, I think it'll never touch, thank God, the that kind of thing, because there's such a real demand. It's not economic. It's actually just like spiritual that the child loves. Most children love to draw. I know that there's absolutely children who don't.
I mean, and that hits at this, like what I tell my students, that there is at the core of us, there is a need to communicate. And if we don't have that language, like we were cave dwellers, right? And we still found nomadic or whatever, and like we still found the ability or the need, the like a ritual to leave a mark and leave a symbol behind. Yeah, so like I give my kids, like they have this 18 by 24 newsprint sketch pad that I had like a long time ago that have all sorts of like sketch meanderings of late night sketches that I made that are completely not precious at all. And I found it at the bottom, like drawer of my studio, and I brought it out for them. So now they're layering their markings on top, and they don't give a fuck that like there's already drawings on it. They are practicing. Isaiah is practicing his like writing on it. So he'll like switch from like writing his name to writing the alphabet, and then all of a sudden like just drawing like a bat monster.
Yeah.
And it's all on the same page, and it's just the ease of which it comes. Like Levi, who's 2.5, like will just draw like a mutated circle and put like two dots like a foot away from that circle and just call it like an eyes, and like it's just.
And well, it's I can all, see how that would be particularly influential to your work, as you were saying earlier. You kind of play around with that language a lot.
Right. Yeah. It's those initial impulses that aren't. Cultivated through academia that aren't, I mean, and obviously there's no way of me going taking that away and like of my schooling and whatnot, but I didn't necessarily have that. So I went to PAFA, but I went to Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Art. I went for grad school, so I didn't necessarily have that like academic training. I went to University of Delaware for art, and it wasn't like this rigorous training, but I've been in programs like that. And yeah, just like making and practicing through my life, all the hours that go into, I can't like undo that and like get back into this naive language. But like, you know, my circle might look more like a circle than my 2-year-old's. But what I can obtain from the way that they handle is that, yeah, just that urgency, I suppose, at which they deliver their marks and just keep moving forward. I don't have that pure I can't get to it, but it's nice to like witness it on a daily basis and kind of to just allow that to enter my psyche when I go.
Well, when did you arrive at the particular style you use now? Not that it's a fixed thing, but I mean,
right? Yeah, it's always changing, but there's definitely like There's a thread through it, but I also hope that it's not such a like thick thread that I can't take these leaps, because I have like multi things happening in the studio at once. I think it started from like I was from elementary school, like collecting Pogs and X-Men cards and like just drawing those colors and shapes and like skeletons and things like this that then when I think high school was more so about like me kind of, all right, I have interests and I have certain skill set and I want to, and I have an ego. So I am going to, try to get better at like drawing the likeness of a friend and whatnot and get like the, the spectatorship of that, of like, you know, and so that, but that, I feel like when I went to college, though, I started asking different questions of, like, I started thinking about color more. I don't know how it related to my own, like, sensations and what it meant. Like, I started asking different questions of the materials and not just, like, making drawing because I thought that you would, which it took, like, it didn't, I think there was still a period in college that I felt like I needed to draw something to make it look like something so somebody could immediately recognize it.
Right.
Grad school was, because I had a couple years in between undergrad and grad, and I'm trying not to, like, focus all on, like, my style or my, how it came from school. Like, it comes outside of that and just experience and people and all the things. But grad school gave me the opportunity of, I was surrounded by very serious painters, like oil paint, painting from observation at Pennsylvania Academy. And I was also surrounded by, like, incredibly experimental. Like, it was interesting. Like, I was in grad school, but I am in company of the undergrads. And by the time they got, like, through their very academic, traditional 2 years, a lot of them departed into just very, like, radical non-academic art, or they sustained it. So I felt myself more like in a circle of, like, performative, experimental through the undergrad and through grad school. So I joined forces with one of my, like, best friends, Vince Johnson. We established a performative group called Keep It Up. He is a martial artist, teacher, b-boy. He's a performer. I mean, since 3 years old, he was, like, competing with martial artists and always getting an applause from the crowd. And we got to a point in our lives where we're, like, kind of want to push back on that and make a viewer or audience feel a little, here comes the train. So I might take
off. Here she comes.
Once I get into a cart.
Okay, yeah, that's no problem. I'll just edit it out.
All right. See, make sure I'm not going on the quiet. Quiet part. Let's see here. All right. Is this a card that I can talk on? I don't know if this clown. Thank you. All right. Yeah, so it was, like, second year of grad school where I was able to join forces with him, and I was painting all the same time. I was, like, I had solitude in the studio and doing my own thing, but at the same time I was putting myself in very anxious and vulnerable settings because we would be doing these performances in public, and we even got a grant. We ended up getting kicked out of this one grant that we got. Because
that's cool.
Yeah. At the end of it.
How so?
Well, so I'll tell you how. Well, they took us out to dinner, which they said was dinner, but really they just bought us a soda at a restaurant and said, yeah, we're going to need to, like, ask you guys to leave. And the reason being is because, it's kind of long stories. There's a few performances that were making this institution of, like, live arts Philly thing, this grant thing in Philly, they're getting a little concerned about the types of performances. I think when they were thinking about experimentation, they were thinking about, like, something more contained. But
yeah, as is every institution.
Yeah, I was I was really letting myself go in terms of just being part of the ride of, like, kind of being a counterpart to my friend Vince, who was a performer, often getting fully naked, often screaming at, like, gallery goers or the audience and putting them in very, like never, like, assaulting, but, like, getting close to a certain line of, like, because, again, he spent his whole life getting rounds of applause, like standing ovations for his abilities that he could perform, like do a backflip on the spot and things like this. And now, and a lot of the crowd that came out, they knew him and they thought they were going to get that type of show. And it was opposite. There's also certain things that shows that we had that were quite destructive. Like, we were rehearsing. We had a rehearsing like area studio, and we learned that they were going to be tearing it down, like for to build homes, just part of the system of gentrification in Philly. This was like a really lively studio space for artists and makers, and they were going to tear it down for new homes. And in the back, there was all these like containers of, I don't know, like from plates to lights to, I don't think this is kind of incriminating ourselves because they saw it happen after. But we had a performance where we just invited like a core of artists and anybody that was walking by this area on like a Saturday afternoon. And we like created a mountain of destruction in there. And like, because we knew, I mean, we kind of asked like, hey, what's going on with all these light bulbs and personal artifacts that are stored in this back space? They're like, I don't know. We don't know. So we're like, all right, we're going to use it as props. They're like, okay. The next day I woke up with this like pit in my stomach, like thinking I was going to get arrested but instead of being arrested, they just kicked us out of the thing. It was a beautiful experience. Like destruction can be very beautiful. Nobody got hurt. Nobody got offended. It was just pure like physical action of like throwing shit against the wall and dressing ourselves up and singing and just being very like of the moment of, like there was a piano in there. There was we connected a swing to the ceiling and we're like created this like jungle gym of sorts. It was wild. We did a lot of stuff and we did stuff like just on like Broad Street and like in the middle of daylight, just like setting a little stage up and just reciting, screaming poetry and performing in a way that I was always like doing something that was in akin to painting. Like I was usually pushing some sort of material around, whether it be like food or paint or whatever on a surface, while my friend Vince was like more doing like the acrobatic weird nasty stuff. But while he'd be like stripping down naked, I might be like painting like green slime on his body and things like that. But so yeah, that after we got kicked out, we, you know, the name Keep It Up was always like this thing that we're like, we could always like, I feel like we're 80 years old and we can like send a text to each other trying to keep it up and like we'll get into something. But I think he's kind of leveled out. He's a businessman. He has like a studio where he educates children. So we're just, I think at this moment in our life, we're like, I think about it often in that stage, and it was necessary. It was also very disruptive. Like maybe if I put more attention to my painting during that time, like, I don't know, but I think it was necessary for me to kind of get out of my comfort zone. And so this goes back to the question, how does it relate to my style? I think I was able to take more liberties after that kind of phase, with like what I wanted from my services. Oh, I also like then cherished my time of just making on my own and like created more like, I started going with very small paintings. I think the paintings that you became familiar with, that's when I started making things that were like more like intimate objects. But I was able to take more liberties with the paint. I think I wasn't like, I was being more explorative with the subject matter. I was just kind of like churning them out in a way and not treating them very. They were very jewel-like, but I wasn't incredibly precious with, like, when I hit something, I hit it, and I put it to the side, and I started another painting type of deal. So that felt really good.
Yeah, that's what stood out about them is their tactility and their physical presence, for sure.
Yeah, and then more and more I started mixing minerals, like the Wissahickon Woods are outside of Philly, and you actually see this, it's a formica, it's a schist. You see it in the sidewalks of Philly, like this gritty kind of sparkly surface. And you can find that in the Wissahickon. And I'd go by the creek and collect a lot of that. And I'd be mixing it into my paint to create that very tactile, that terrestrial surfaces on my paintings, even more so. I think like much more so than when you saw my paintings. And my ultimate goal was making it so that like it felt like I was extracting this rectangle out of either a sidewalk or out of the woods in a way, or out of like a brick wall type of deal. I was merely like just kind of, I wanted it to be sort of a sense of discovery for the viewer, of like a familiarity of like, oh, I've seen that before. Like whether it was like an oil puddle on a sidewalk with like a something next shiny next to it reflecting the moon. Can't quite place my finger on it, but I wanted them to be familiar enough, but distant enough. I wanted them to be personal, but also universal, of this earth, but also could be the surface of another planet. It took me a while to find Carl Sagan, but I found him when I was making a batter of magic brownies, and I was just like eating the batter and like watching my first episode of Cosmos, and that shit like set me off. I got fascinated with the idea of micro and macro and being able, having something read accessibly, but also incredibly the immeasurable like mystery of everything. So that those equations went into my painting, and I think that bubbled up a kind of aesthetic that I was searching for.
And in respect to the career as a painter, like, what have you learned? You know, as you were saying, you could have maybe used that time to double down and say experiment. Do you mean that in the kind of careerist sense, or just because it sounds like you would have never found what you have found if you...
Right. I think careerist sense. I think grad school is about making, like, establishing those connections with, if it's like a gallerist, a curator visiting you. I was all over the place by my second year and a couple years after. But ultimately, I think that's very healthy and productive. But I didn't have the platform to say, this is my work, this is what you'll know me by. Like, it was there, but it wasn't there. And it derailed me. Even one of my professors told me, like, I remember my last crit, it was like, so there was an argument between two critics of like professors and saying like, yeah, you're derailing. Like, what's going on? But somebody came to my side and was like, yeah, but isn't that important? Like, produce here? Somebody that walks away grad school with like a polished body of work, or somebody that's like about to go off on their own with a lot of unanswered questions? And not that these questions are ever going to be answered, but spaces of exploration that are feeling super ripe. And like, I just felt so excited to leave grad school and participate in the kind of multiplicity of my practice. But again, yeah, if I had more focus on a singular entity, I might have met a gallerist that like then jumped me. You know, there would have been more of a linear.
Yeah, to me, it's just being and becoming, but they have to be in balance. Mm-hmm. Like, there's certainly something to be said for both sides of those arguments, and it isn't clear what school is for, since school costs a lot of money.
Yes.
You know, there's the temptation to solidify and start to brand and commodify because you're paying, and it seems logical that that's where you would end up. But then also, it's a time away from the world's demands and the consumer's logic. So there's an argument to be made for that it's just like more of a vacuum. Vacuum, but
yeah, it's within that space it's that vacuum that was most meaningful. You know, fortunately, I got certain scholarship that allowed me to have that not such a weight on me. That was a big part of grad school. Like, all right, this is going to be putting me in debt. So which option do I have? I had like a few options. I think I ended up applying to 8 schools, got into a few. And I was I was about to go to San Francisco, and I got very little scholarship money, and I was going to be like in a bigger hole than a lot of my like friends that are doctors now. Like, that, I'm so happy that I made a adult choice of like, no, I'm going to stay in Philly. I already know a few artists here, and I'm going to really kind of nurture that, this connection to this space. That was a big part of like, where am I going to be at after grad school? And I more and more kind of just felt like Philly was important for me to kind of grow as a young artist. And I wasn't only hanging out with visual artists. Like my friend Vince, he was a performer, dancer. I was hanging out with like musicians. So I was making music videos for bands. I felt like I was part of the community that was very important. And having that time in grad school, that vacuum, you say, meeting like that community that are now like my circle, my like family, like they're my family, they're my friends. And they still, you know, not everybody, but there's a handful that still live around here that we're growing through life together as artists, but also as parents. And yeah, it's meaningful.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, I don't know, it always confused me what Philadelphia's art scene is or was. And obviously, you made a decision to stick around. But can you describe that to someone who doesn't understand or has never been there?
Yeah, I think it's filled with, first off, like a history of culture, like from, you know, from like Billie Holiday to Sun Ra, like the jazz to like real, like authentic kind of, there's an authenticity of Philly that through the history that you still can feel just walking down the streets. So you can definitely plug into that sort of, you're part of that line, but I think then you're part of a scene that's artist collective, artist operated galleries. So, and I was part of a couple of those. I was part of Little Berlin, which was a very raw space, experimentation in the curatorial sense. I was part of Tiger Strikes Asteroid, which was more of a, on the threshold of commercial, but also it was, you curate objects, but there is also, I think the ability to experiment and explore there as well, as opposed to then there's the commercial scene. But even the commercial scene in Philly, the pro of it is, I think, like, you are, there's an intimacy in Philly where you can really, you know, go to the shows and set yourself up to meet people and find the galleries that you feel an affinity with and meet those curators. There's also a couple of the galleries that are like, you know, kind of out of reach, but they show international artists, and it's there's five art schools there. I think there's a lot of artists that move from LA and New York that realize that they could purchase a very large studio and home in Philly, and I think that happens a lot. That's happening even more so in this globalized world where you don't necessarily need to be in one center,
right.
Especially since Philly is like 2 hours away from New York. Yeah, I think you get this idea, you go through grad school in Philly and like, all right, I think a lot of the students went like, now I need to go to New York. But then there's a whole crew that sticks around Philly. And I think there's just like it's grittier. It's a less concerned about the commercialism of your work. I had the ability to take those leaps. On the downside, yeah, you're like maybe struggling to get into that gallery that is able to put you on its roster because there's not a lot of it. There's not a lot of art writing in Philly. There's things that are absent, but I think in that absence, perhaps you can have the ability to find your own and afford to be able to do that. And at the same time, while you're making your work here, you can figure out, all right, like, I guess I'll go to New York for those shows, or I'll go to, you know, if you want to. I could have always been really a lot better at that, getting outside of Philly to, but I think like a lot of, you know, my friends that are really setting off that have a international career are most of them are still living and rooted in Philly for that accessibility, for that, to have a studio, to have a life that they can just commit to their, to more, I guess, simplified and not have this outrageous rent or mortgage. And, and I'm finding like not only my friends that live in Philly, my friends that are starting to get represented are, I mean, my one good friend is living in like Pine Barrens, New Jersey, and I love to go visit him. And he's kind of, because it's like a vacation for me to just go for the afternoon to ride a bike in the Pine Barrens and visit his studio. He lives in like a house that was built in the early 1800s or so, and he's making landscapes of his surroundings in a way that's quite peculiar, but like rooted in like Milton Avery, Albert York type of aesthetic, and he kind of, I think, found a loophole in the whole system of not going to shows and networking, but like just starting to feed his Instagram with his artwork, especially during like COVID, where he's making a lot of paintings and people found him, discovered him. So I think there's the ability of not needing, having that falling under the pressure of needing to go move to a centralized art mecca, art center. I'm not downplaying the significance that could play in one's path, the importance and the necessity, like some people need to live in the city and feel that charge and feel that activity and be in the scene. It's productive for them, but I am enjoying the notion of letting go of that a bit and recognizing that there's not just that singular path of, right, to be in any one space.
There's definitely many ways to approach it.
Right.
But also there's like also, I think there's, how do you word it? And I'm not sure this is valid, but one's natural inclination, one's natural expression doesn't always meet the market in the most harmonious of ways. And so maybe it fits better into academia. Maybe it is perfect for Instagram. Maybe it's more, you know, your work is very much tactile to me and it is a real object. And so that's an interesting thing to try to convey.
Yeah, that's hard.
Through a website or Instagram.
Yeah. Very hard. I'm more so like, it's more common for me to be on the precipice of pushing the post button and then deleting or taking it away because I don't think it's being, to me, I'm there in the moment looking at this thing an inch away and I'm like giddy about it. But then I see the photograph and it like flattens everything and I don't post much because of that until I get like a final object done where I can post a couple angles. But even that is not the same. And yeah, I mean, there's been people that collect my work that have only seen it on a website or Instagram, and I hope that they're even more, that they're pleasantly surprised by the object in the flesh. And it's a game that I wish I was better at with like posting on Instagram and all these things, but I just know that it's like reducing what my work is, and so I'm okay with not being great at it because for that reason. I think if I felt like I was good at it and just posting a thing once a day or once, be like, I would be building this identity to my work that's just not real and super anxious come with posting. And
so I appreciate,
like, you see my work in person. I appreciate your understanding of that. I just eager for more opportunities of like being able to show the work to that, you know, and like to have people see it in person. But yeah, it's like in this modern day, it's like, I think the ultimate gallery is that of social media. So kind of not sure how I negotiate that other than just hoping somebody else can take really decent photos and think of a nice little narrative of stories to like somebody else do it for me. But until that day, I'll just awkwardly be posting and deleting. Own it more. I want to own it more, but I also listen to that little voice of like, that's not real. Like, obey so much to that algorithm. But I also see what it's definitely a loophole for and productive for a lot of people. And
it can be, yeah.
It can be.
I think your kind of work needs to be seen in person. So,
right.
You know, there's kind of a domino effect of the characteristics of one's work and then where they have to end up in the end. So, like, I think your work needs to basically end up in a gallery to be appreciated.
Yeah, and I always thought, like, all right, maybe I make a thread or, like, an Instagram handle that's rooted in, like, my what informs my practice and not necessarily, and maybe, you know, post a painting like every now and then. I have fun thinking about what sort of systems I can create to kind of have more of a presence and familiarity online, but not make it my painting practice. Just like the Keep It Up performance thing, like have it being a tangent of my practice, of my painting practice, but not being it. And then allowing that to be an extension or because I used to do that a lot, especially I find it harder to do that now living in the suburbs, but like living in Philly, every square of a sidewalk block was like a painting to me. I was like, it's very hard to walk. My wife found it very hard to walk with me in the city because she'd usually be like a block or two ahead of me and just waiting, because I'd be just so fascinated by like these relationships in a singular sidewalk square. And I don't even have a sidewalk now where I live. So I've like rhododendrons and birds, which is lovely. It's a whole different language. And it is, I think, starting to be productive in my work, in that just more in a more natural way, thinking about entropy in a more natural position, as opposed to seeing entropy like in a city of like decay of like an old sign, which, or like of human-made materials decaying.
Well, it even seems like you're breaking outside that rectangle a bit more. I'm not sure if that's accurate, but
yeah, I found like when I started putting fragments of objects onto my surface, which is fairly new, I then like it allowed me to be more liberal in approaching just the surface in general, and finding fragments and piecing into the side. So not having a rectangle that I typically work just vertically, like it's a slight rectangle, so slight verticality, and I don't really work with a square often, and still don't find the square kind of difficult, but I'm having fun with like putting like a chunk of a wooden surface connected to the side of it and creating like object, more of an object, as opposed to thinking about it as a rectilinear painting surface.
Yeah, I see that in some of the newer stuff you've posted, which makes sense, honestly, if you're less in a rectangular world.
Yeah, I always gotten some interesting conversations of why the rectangle. Maybe you have some thoughts on like why has it always been customary to the traditional sense of painting is with 90 degrees and four corners, and obviously there's a history of going up against that. Certain artists and my friends say like it's the way we see, like the peripheral. I feel like we see more in a circular kind of lens. It's the grid. I don't know. What are your thoughts? Why is it a rectangle?
Well, I've never even thought about it, but maybe it's scroll related. Like it's the easiest thing to roll. I'm just thinking about canvas and portability of certain images.
Right.
I'm not sure if I'm remembering this or not correctly, but that whether it was, I don't know if it was maybe a Judeo-Christian thing, like the necessity to roll up something to kind of have it be portable. Sure. Obviously, there's the Egyptian scrolls. It just seems kind of, I guess, easy, right?
There's things that went around, scrolls that went around like columns. And I mean, obviously, you know, we start off again like in caves. They're not working in the rectilinear structure. But outside of that, then you have like stretched skins that weren't necessarily rectilinear. Maybe papers like that were then made. Yeah, I think, yeah, you're probably onto something there with like scrolling and the ability to catalog, and I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's just like an extension of a line, right? And it's just, you're just extruding a line out, and you know, they are bifurcated with a line. So there must be some I don't know. That seems to be important.
Yeah, I mean, TV screens, right? Like, that we're not watching a circle. We're watching it contained within a frame.
What are those, you know, when you wear those, click those glasses and they combine two rectangles? I guess there is something visual about that, right? Because it would be funny if TVs were shaped like goggles or something.
Yeah.
But you really
like binoculars, yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking. I guess I kind of see in a rectangle. It's kind of annoying me that I'm thinking about it, but is it a rectangle? But
they're not sharp corners. It gets a little fuzzy. I see, it's not like necessarily a fish lens how we see. It's not. It's distorted, but I feel like it's more of a circular. This guy just got on the train and he looks exactly like RFK Jr. Pretty wow.
That'd be a good impersonation.
Oh, yeah,
I think that's a funny one.
But I'm excited about the freedom I'm feeling as of now to experiment with the surface and paint as paint is still performing as I'm still painting imagery and shapes and things like that are defined, but I also am allowing fragments that are already a thing to then subvert them or to metamorphosize them as something in relationship to my painting world.
Do you have the desire to I think there's always this tension of experimentation versus like you were saying with the critique. So how old are you now?
I am 38.
38. So it's interesting. Is there an age to solidify versus, what would you say, disintegrate or experiment versus digging down vertically? What is your opinion on that? Especially as you have children, I assume stability starts to become, at least in the tangible sense, a priority. But does that make the art want to be more experimental? Do you have any view on that?
I think one of the productive things of finding a job that is more stable is I can take the pressure of needing my artwork to be a thing that is commodified. It takes pressure as a way of, it allows me to I can really do whatever I want because I have the financial support of this job. Obviously there's friction and a lot of limitations with then all the time that's absorbed through that job. So finding that impossible balance would be a lifetime pursuit. But I also have recently, I am with a gallery in, I've been showing with them the past few years, but recently it's a bit more formal and we have these conversations in the studio. He celebrates my meanderings and experimentations, and he supports that there's a time and place for to show these. But there's also the conversation of all right, he is really, the goal is for this gallery to find a space in Philly where he can, inspire young collectors to collect objects that are in some way accessible, that don't disintegrate, that aren't made just strictly from dirt or cicada shells or things or bubble gum,
right,
that are more that will last the test of time. But that I'm used to that again, that multiplicity. I like kind of putting on those two different hats. I have a station in my studio that is that impermanent station, and it feeds into my, and I'm still trying to work out the ways of even gluing down objects onto the surface. Is this going to last? Am I using the right glue? I'm using these materials that I don't really have much experience with and hoping that I'm doing it right. So when it's out of my studio, but at the same time, when I was, especially when I was working at ICA and getting to handle these certain art objects like Ree Morton, Carrie Leibowitz, pieces that were just made with house paint on an unprimed raw piece of wood, you just got to make it. And they typically will last if you treat it right, if they're right in the right conditions. And if they don't, that somebody else is going to school to make them last if they need to last, and not everything needs to last. It's been really great to see things wither away, and I think a lot about that, like compost and rotting, and so I think that's an important part of the studio, of allowing certain things to have a very quick life. The immediacy, even just the immediacy of like collaging and drawing, like that just doing it and then walking away from it, so freeing. But then, yeah, I still have those pieces that are been marinating and being layered for like more than a year, and just making them just so and polished and refined, but also like regurgitating kind of some earthly like stew of kind of, you know, feeling like they're transforming, but freezing them in a state.
Right. Well, it sounds unfettered. You would skew towards the more chaotic, entropic, right? Like, given no financial restrictions or expectations, you would maximize experimentation over maximizing technical refinement. Is that fair?
It's fair, but I am also pursuing that. You know, like I said, there's an extension. I think I do get satisfaction from making sure an object will last.
Yeah.
To the degree that it needs to last while I'm around or whoever, whatever.
No, I mean,
whatever,
you're right. As I think about the work, there's like an actual physical integrity to the work, despite it looking like it's in a mid-state.
Right.
I don't know if you've ever seen these triple state videos of water. You ever seen that?
No.
My Lord. Look that up when we're done. Triple state?
Like vapor to ice.
It's all of them are happening at the exact same moment. It's like the Holy Trinity or something. It's super bizarre. I think you'll like that idea. But yeah, for me, that's poetry, right? It's like two opposites held in tension harmoniously. All poetry to me is that.
I'm sorry. I'm Jefferson.
This is Suburban.
Suburban Station. Station. Sorry, Michael.
One more. I just said the most profound shit.
Yeah, I know, and I heard it. And it was beautiful. And then somebody asked me for directions, and I didn't know.
No, I like that. That's perfect.
You know, but yeah, that's. I think you hit it. Like that's what. Hopefully, we have reception here. I'm in the belly of the train station. I'm rising up to the streets. So.
Well, while we're being and becoming.
Yes.
This whole podcast, we're traveling through space and time.
I hope you're picking up some of the sounds, the echoey, and then you'll start to hear the city sounds.
How far are you from emerging?
I have reached I'm still inside, but I've reached the ground floor. So we are now walking through the turnstile.
Wow.
Oh, shit, I got to put my card in here. Let me get this stuff out.
Oh, Lord. This is immersive.
Uh-oh. Where did I put
the drama?
Here we go. You hear the beep beep?
Oh, yeah.
Let's get it. All right. Amazing that I still have funds on this card, the infrequency that I take that train. All right. I think I see daylight. Suburban.
Beautiful.
Jefferson
well, this is
Station.
The denouement. We need to kind of. I feel like there's some physical reason to wrap it up.
Yeah, man. Well, yes to that because I think it's a great time to do that. But I also like amplifying what you were. As I'm getting lost, I see outside, but I'm still lost because I don't see the exit. So let's wait until I actually emerge. But just to amplify what you were saying, like, yeah, that's what I'm seeking. Like that in between phase, that threshold of like not arriving. Something is happening in the paintings. It's fertile. Is that like it's a garden, man? Like it's a.
I get that, yeah.
And it's like looking at the sky. Like there's always like you see these constellations. They're always going to be for you to come back to. But you're always going to see other shit that's like happening too. I hope for that. Like, I also seek the simplicity and the harmony of like tantric paintings that are so centered and like minimal. But in their minimalism, I feel like you just get lost within your own mind state that you can kind of transport into. They're a portal just by like adding a dot in the middle with a tiny spiral. Like, that's enough. So, oh man, I just opened up the door. I'm outside and I just breathed in an immense amount of urine vapor. Like, I thought I was about to get some fresh air.
Beautiful.
It was delicious.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm now headed to an art talk. And this I haven't like talked art in a long time, so this has been very rewarding, and I think it's kind of coded me to be able to maybe be more articulate for this art talk, or maybe less articulate. And I hope we arrived at somewhere in this talking together, and didn't arrive anywhere at all. But I appreciate you reaching out in this conversation.
Same.
Very meaningful.
Can people watch this art talk or at a later date?
Now, where I'm going to right now?
Yeah.
It is at Commonweal Gallery. That's a gallery that I'm affiliated with. It's a collaborative show, so it's kind of like a one-off show where, interesting, you know, like, we are paired as teams. So we are meeting like as a group to just talk about that collaborative process. And I don't know if it's going to be videotaped or if it's just like an informal like gathering. Okay. I think it's going to be informal.
Okay.
Yeah, man.
Fair enough. Well, thanks for taking the time out to talk to me. Good talk, Nick.
What a lovely Saturday morning.
I hope we see each other one time before we die.
Yeah. Dude, it's going to happen. Like I said, I'm in Jersey. I don't know how far away I know the Pine Barrens are big, but like near Tuckahoe, I frequent, you know, I try to get out there as often as possible to see my friends. So maybe we can link up, but you're like close to New York, right? You're
Yeah. North. I mean, okay. I have a story where I got lost in the Pine Barrens. It was super funny.
Did you see the devil?
No, I saw a broken toilet seat though.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of that, a lot of dumping stuff.
I was trying to bike from Philadelphia through Camden to Long Beach Island, and
oh, that's awesome.
And I don't know how, but I trusted like the beta version of Google Maps, and I went through the Pine Barrens just carrying my bicycle, and one of my brothers ended up saving me, and it was amazing. It was great. Wow. Anyway, don't want to go into that.
Yeah, man, I'm sure we'll cross paths, and but just like we did now, you know, it's been a while, we're able to. This is a crossing of paths.
That's right.
But physically, in the future, let's make it happen.
Will do. Have a good one.
All right, dude. I'll talk to you. Peace.
Peace.
Music by Dori Bavarsi and Mingja Chen. Next up, we have Dave Levy. Have a good week.